Oh, it's good to see you guys. We're wrapping up our 10-week sermon series on the Sermon on the Mount. Thank you for going through that with us here. We spent the last many Sundays up on the mountain with Jesus, listening to his teachings. And today we reach the edge of his sermon where he starts to bring everything down to a point, which is an invitation. Saying there's different ways to live. Which story will we trust? Which foundation do we want to build on? And he makes this invitation through three short vignettes that feature two gates, two roads, two trees, and two houses. All right, so choices everywhere. And these choices point toward answering one question. Are we going to choose a path that brings us life? And I want us to see that this is the same invitation that was offered to the humans all the way back in the Garden of Eden, right? So in the origin myth, the creation myth from Genesis chapters like 1 to 3, right? We've got the Garden of Eden. We've got Adam and Eve. Adam just means the human and the sustainer of life, right? These symbolic humans that are in the garden who have been created to live in connection with God and themselves and each other and with the creation. And we know that in this Eden story or in this garden, there's two named trees, right? You've got the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And the tree of life brings nourishment and thriving, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil brings hardship, or what the Bible describes as curses. And the question in the story is, will the humans eat of the tree that brings them nourishment, or are they going to eat from the tree that is forbidden? And we know how that story goes. They ate of the forbidden fruit, and it didn't go so well for them. Well, that question keeps appearing in Scripture. It's a question that Moses poses at the end of Torah. So in Deuteronomy 30, Moses says, "This day I call the heavens and the earth as witnesses against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, so that you and your children might live, and that you might love the Lord your God. Listen to their voice, hold fast to them. The Lord is your life." Now, I don't think there's only two stories that we can live our lives by, but I think we can take the point that the narrative is trying to give to us here, right? It's saying that there's more helpful way of being and living, and there's a path that leads to greater hardship. And if we hear what Jesus has been telling us throughout the Sermon on the Mount about this second path, the one that leads to more hardship, he's warning about what that path entails. And he says, it's the one where we decide that we're good at judging other people's hearts and motives. And he says, judge not, lest you be judged. Turns out we humans, we really love to judge other people's hearts and motives, but we're really, really bad at it. I mean, I'm really good at it, right, Rachel? No. It's a path where we become consumed with our social standing or become consumed with making money. It's a path where we embrace violence and self-preservation, where we mistreat people who are closest to us, especially our intimate partners. It's a path where we deny God's love and care for us, and we don't treat people in the ways that we want to be treated. All right, so Jesus says this in Matthew 7. He says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the road is easy that leads to destruction." My apologies to this half of the room, because I'm going to use this to symbolize the bad path, and over here is the good path. I'm not saying anything, really. He said, but there's many people who take this path, for the gate is narrow and the road is hard that leads to life, and there are few who find it. Right? So one way is easy and crowded, and the other way is less easy, and fewer people take it. And so Jesus, throughout the Sermon on the Mount, we've listened to him describe a way of life that's found through that narrow gate. It's the way of mercy. It's the way of nonviolence, of honesty, right? Of saying, let your yes be yes and your no be no. It's a way of courage. It's a way where we use the proper use of authority and influence. It's a way of forgiveness, integrity, generosity, trust in God, loving our enemies, which means showing kindness to people that we see as sort of outside our tribe, right? It's easy to show your in-group kindness. It's much less easy to show your out-group kindness. The narrow path isn't narrow because it excludes people. It's narrow because practicing that kind of expansive love and integrity can be a lot harder than giving in to fear and to dishonesty and to prioritizing your own self-preservation. And so it makes me think a little bit of Star Wars. Rachel and I got influenza A this summer. It was rough. It's like 2 weeks, but the first week was really bad. We were super sick, so we were like, you know what, we're just gonna watch all 9 of the Star Wars movies in order. And by in order, I mean like the story order, right? The prequels, and then the originals, and then the later ones. And so even if you don't like Star Wars, and you're like, oh God, Emily, we all know who Darth Vader is, right? And that he symbolizes the kind of person who's driven by fear and by a real love of unbridled power. And I think that story really shows how it's hard for humans to resist the temptations that are symbolized by him, right? It's the temptations to be in control and to turn to violence or to allow other people to use violence on our behalf when we feel vulnerable. And the movies say it's just a lot easier to follow that path because ultimately it doesn't require that much of you, right? It's really seductive. You say, just give in to your fear. Just give in to the power, right? And it's the resisting it that actually takes more work. But it's the resisting it that leads to community and to connection and to happiness. And so I think what Jesus is saying is similar. It's just maybe a little bit of a less interesting metaphor or a little less intense of a metaphor. He's saying forgiveness is harder than retaliation. Justice is harder than ignoring a problem, and compassion is harder than cynicism. Cynicism is so easy. That's probably one of my kryptonites. Cynicism is so easy. We say, but man, choosing these other things is what leads to a better quality of life, right? So the wide road's easier because there's little personal transformation that's required of us. I know Daniel was preaching about that part where it's, you know, instead of you look at your brother and the speck in his eye, but before you go help get that out, you better make sure that you get that big plank that's stuck in your own, right? And it's not saying don't help your brother get the speck out of his eye. It's just saying you better be really, 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 really careful about thinking that you're in a position to do that. And you better have done a whole lot of your own work because that big old plank is just sticking right out there and everybody else can see it. Right? The narrow road is harder because it asks for our hearts. It asks for us to have some insight into our own motives. And it asks for us to have courage to do that inner work. I think Jesus is saying there's a way of being human that leads to wholeness. And I highly recommend taking that route because it's just going to go better for you overall. We'll go on. Matthew 7:15. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You'll know them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorns or figs from thistles? In the same way, every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree can't bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will know them by their fruits. So I was reading a book of poems this week by a poet whose name is Elizabeth Bishop. And there was a stanza that stood out to me in one of them. It was a poem that's called Dear My Compass. And so in this short poem, she's writing to a lover of hers that lives in a warmer climate. And she's describing how her heart is still pointed toward the colder climates where she was raised, up in New England and Nova Scotia. Right, so the name is Dear My Compass is Pointed North. And I kind of relate to that because I feel like I like the seasons. But this line stood out to me, and I just kept chewing on it. It says, but crab apples ripen to rubies, cranberries to drops of blood. Like crab apples ripen to rubies, cranberries to drops of blood. And so she's taken these two fruits, both of which are edible, right? And she likens one of them to something really precious, right? To a gemstone. Like something that was stolen out of the Louvre last month, if you guys saw that. Like a good old-fashioned heist. I shouldn't be rooting for the heisters, but it was just like, I thought everything was like observable these days. I didn't think you could do that. It was kind of fascinating. Anyway, sorry. I mean, don't steal, right? But one she likens to a gemstone, and the other she likens to a drop of blood. Now, a drop of blood doesn't have to signify violence, but there is like a little bit of an undertone of that, isn't there, to it? I mean, blood can symbolize a lot of things, vulnerability, life source things, but I just think it sounds a little bit more sinister than rubies. It's a little bit risky. It's a little bit of a spectrum of meaning we get from the color red, right? Anything from something beautiful and vibrant and expensive to something that's just a little bit like, ooh, can I touch that? And I was thinking about how both of these are edible fruits, and yet one she describes as precious and the other is a little bit dangerous. And like, how can you tell the difference? They both look really good. And I thought, well, maybe you can't tell the difference right away. And I think in the same way we might say to Jesus, how do we know if we're on the narrow path? Right? How do we know if we're heading in a direction that's going to bring us life? And I think sometimes the answer is we might not know right away. Right? You might have to just kind of wait and see what fruit comes forth from following that path or doing what you're doing. And what do we mean by the fruit? Well, the Apostle Paul, I think, gives us a little bit of help there. He says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Yeah. I'm going to say, any of you who grew up in the church and saw the music or did the Music Machine, it's probably ingrained in you forever, as it is me. It's just saying, what sorts of things are produced by your choices? Are these the sorts of things that you're seeing in different parts of your life? You know, nothing and no one is perfect. You're not going to, but in general, is your choice producing rubies or is it producing drops of blood? And that might take a little bit of time to discern. And they're kind of like, that's okay, right? Jesus is teaching using this metaphor, like, it's okay. One of the things about fruit trees is that just because one is producing bad fruit this year doesn't mean it's always going to be that way, right? When Rachel and I first moved into our house 11 years ago, I had several fruit trees, and one of them is a pear tree, and it produced enough good fruit that I was able to make like a really nice pear tart out of it, and it was really good. And so we were excited. We were like, oh, we've got like fruit trees. But then for the next 9 years, the tree just looked rougher and rougher and gave us nothing good. It produced next to nothing. I'm fairly confident that all the black walnut trees nearby are keeping it from being its best self. You know, like black walnuts produce this like toxin called juglone. It's toxic to a lot of other plants. And so I'm pretty sure that our pear tree is not living its best life because of that. But sure enough, Rachel pruned the tree this last spring, and I put out my yearly little like organic fruit tree fertilizer that I faithfully put around all the fruit trees, cleared it of some vines, and by golly, we got a little crop of really good pears this year. Probably the best pears that we've had. Yeah, they're little, but like I was able to make a blueberry pear pie that was really pretty good. And now I'm like, I don't know what I do now, because I had this plan, right? I thought that tree was dying slowly, and so I went and planted a pawpaw tree next to it 2 years ago, because pawpaw trees do really well next to black walnut trees. And so I was like, okay, I think I'm being smart here. I'll wait till the pawpaw tree gets, you know, like a decent size. And then when it does, I'll cut down the pear tree that's slowly dying and I will have replaced it. But, you know, if there's like good pears coming from it, I feel kind of bad. So I'm not sure what to do. And I just think like with fruit trees, you just kind of have to watch and see what happens. And you kind of have to let some of the good grow up with the bad, right? And just kind of keep your eye on it, make some little tweaks. And I think if that analogy holds, it might be a little bit liberating to know that just figuring out what isn't working can be the beginning of transformation. Right? It can be the beginning of transformation. Just because something's not going well in one part of your life doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. Like maybe you've had trouble keeping friends, or maybe there's different things in your work life where you haven't felt quite happy, and you're just thinking, why do I feel like I can't produce good things in this area of my life? There's hope, right? We can make changes. We can prune. Soil can be renewed. These are things that we can just evaluate. Jesus closes Matthew 7:24. He says, everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. Rain came down and the floods came up. Some of you know that song, right? The floods came up, the winds blew, and they beat on that house. It did not fall because it had been founded on a rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. And the rains came down and the floods came up and the winds blew and they beat against that house and it fell. And great was its fall. It's like those houses on stilts out on the Outer Banks, right? Like we were talking about it in one of our book groups. It's like, yeah, those are, you feel bad watching them, but it is still kind of spectacular to watch. Same thing, built on sand, it's falling. So Jesus has his closing image here, two houses. Same storm hits both of them, right? The same rain, same wind, but they have different foundations. Now, those of you who know me know I am fascinated by extreme weather. So I follow like hurricane chasers and tornado chasers online. I'm a trained tornado spotter along with Betsy Salzman. We went and did that training many years ago. So one of the guys I was watching just last month was in the eye of Hurricane Melissa this year. So if you don't know, if you're not a weather nerd, Hurricane Melissa was a Category 5 hurricane that hit Jamaica. It was one of the strongest Atlantic storms that's ever been on record. And so this guy goes and he records like all these major storms. And so he made this video on YouTube where he was explaining how he chooses where to bunk down during these storms, because he's really trying to get into the eye of them. And he said, you know, when I'm looking for an actual place to stay, I'm looking for a building several feet above sea level, because you don't want the storm surge to get you. You want something with a really solid foundation and with really thick concrete walls that will withstand anything. And he said, ideally, you don't want to be on a top floor because the roof will go, but you want concrete walls, and even better is if it's a room within a room, like concrete within concrete. And so he had some incredible footage from there of looking out at these 185-mile-an-hour winds. And he's just in this building that held completely solid while most of the other structures in town were flattened. But I loved that picture of him, right? Just being completely safe in this concrete room while absolute chaos was happening outside. Right? I mean, there was like some wind whistling. I mean, the noise gets pretty high. I imagine the pressure is a little bit uncomfortable in the middle of a hurricane. But overall, in that room, they were dry. He had other people in there. He's showing pictures of it. And I was like, wow, it really is just this like calm little place. Well, all hell is breaking loose outside. And that's a picture that I feel like I relate to a little bit with my faith. Right, that faith feels like that to me. It's like I remember when my dad first got sick and had a bad diagnosis, and having this kind of, I felt like an odd reaction to it, which was just this deep sense of peace that God was going to be with him, and that God would be with my mom, and God would be with us kids, even no matter what was going to happen, like knowing bad things were going to happen. And I watched my dad just like really hold on to that as he suffered for a long time. And it wasn't that the suffering didn't come, but it was that he had this incredible peace as he faced it. And so I love that Jesus doesn't pretend that storms aren't going to come. Right? This isn't like a prosperity gospel he's teaching. He's not like, look, if you follow all this stuff, like your life's going to go really well. No, it's reality. Life can go really, really hard at times. But he's saying the grace-filled life is not a stormless life. Right? The grace-filled life is not a stormless life. It's a life with a solid foundation. It's a life that has an inner room that's quiet in the midst of the storms that are happening. He says, what makes that foundation strong? Well, he says, it's not just knowing this stuff, but it's doing it. Right? He said, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. And he says that's the difference between the solid house on sand, or the solid house on rock, and the one on sand. It's like verbs. Be merciful. Don't return violence for violence. Have conversations with people that you're mad at. Seek reconciliation when it's possible. Be generous. At times, give your money in secret. Treat people with kindness and with honor and dignity. Speak clearly and truly. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Trust God. Refrain from judging others. Ask for what you need. Love everyone, including your enemies and your outgroup, and do unto others as you do unto them, or as you would have them do unto you. And he says, that's it. Those are the building instructions for a resilient life. Right? When things fall apart, and they will, that is the foundation that will mean more than anything else, right? When the bad diagnosis comes, when a relationship cracks, when a job disappears, when your kid is really struggling, when the news feels overwhelming, that's when the foundation starts to reveal its strength. And Jesus says at the end of his sermon, well, he doesn't say believe harder or like have bigger feelings about God. He says, choose the way of life, right? Live this, trust this, walk this, build this. And if you do that, if you build on love and mercy and courage and integrity and compassion, your life will endure. All shall be well. All right. So with that, that concludes the Sermon on the Mount. Let's just take a little moment here. We often do some guided meditation or silence. I thought maybe we could just take a moment and just imagine what that peaceful inner room feels like to you when everything's swirling around you. And if it helps to imagine like that Jesus or the Holy Spirit, God, however you imagine God, is in that space with you as the storm is swirling, let's just like sit in that space and present before God whatever it is that we bring with us today to church that's on our hearts. Just give us a few minutes. Spirit, I ask that you would teach us to be able to find that place of peace inside of us when things around us feel a little bit chaotic. I ask that we'd be able to find that place as we're heading into the holiday seasons, if there are different challenges we have with our families or in our lives. Teach us how we can locate you amidst the storm. I also ask that you would help us to be able to discern when things are producing good things in us or not producing good things in our lives. I ask that you just continue to teach us and lead us and guide us so that we can really thrive and we can live lives that are grace-filled and filled with love and that help us find the kind of connection and belonging that we all long for. And so, Spirit, I ask that you would be with us in that. Amen.